WYXR 91.7 FM Memphis, WYXR.org on the web. I'm Robbie Grant, Executive Director, Station Manager here at WYXR. I'm sitting with Jared J.B. Boyd, Program Manager at WYXR. What's up, man?
Hey, man. How's it going?
It's good. I got you in the interview seat today.
Uh-oh, it's hot over here.
Oh, yeah. You're listening to our Clive Davis interview special, and we'll get to that in just a second. But we were in New York in July 2023. We're recording this in August, so just a few weeks ago. And we were in New York because you got the opportunity to interview Booker T. Jones on the Lincoln Center stage. What was that like?
I'm still shaking, man. It's been a few weeks already, but I everywhere around town, people are asking about it, and I can't wait for the people to hear it.
Yeah, and so you can go to WYXR.org and sign up for our newsletter. And we'll be airing that at some point in the next couple weeks. And so tune in there to find out. But we're here to talk about this Clive Davis interview. We've got a new board member that just started this year, Isabel Gonzalez Whitaker. She lived in New York for 20 years. And when we said we were going up there, she reached out and said, I can connect you to some of my contacts up there. So she did that. And one of those contacts was Clive Davis.
Crazy. Not crazy enough that we had the Booker thing. Now we have to double down with some more craziness.
Yeah. So you interviewed Booker on Wednesday, and we woke up Thursday and went to go interview Clive Davis. So you can't say no to that.
You just have to prepare.
Yeah. And just for the uninitiated, I mean, almost everyone we say we interview Clive Davis, like, oh my gosh. But for the completely uninitiated, who's Clive Davis? I mean, I know.
I mean, a music legend, still working at Sony Music, just an incredible kingmaker, king and queen and everything else, behind many, many careers and, even some that were already going. He rejuvenated them with his special touch. Yeah. A man that he could call his hits like Babe Ruth when it comes to music business.
Well, we were lucky we got to talk to him specifically about some Memphis-centric stuff. So let's jump into that. We'll play some music this hour and just hang out and maybe talk a little bit more.
Let's talk.
I hear you perfectly.
Fantastic. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm awesome.
Well, I don't know if it's afternoon or it looks like it maybe is an evening where you are, but I'll go ahead and say good afternoon. My name is Jared Boyd. I'm the program manager at WYXR radio station in Memphis, Tennessee.
Yes. Okay.
Please.
I'm in Capri, Italy. Go ahead. And it's 4:05, roughly.
Fantastic. Well, I'll get right to it, and I appreciate your time being with us today, and we'll let you get back to enjoying yourself in Capri, Italy. But I want to talk a little bit about Memphis and Memphians that had an incredible impact on the music industry. And when I think of your career and I think of my hometown, I definitely think of Aretha Franklin. So I was wondering if that would be an okay place to start talking about your impact on Memphians who have then impacted the music industry. Could you tell me about your relationship and working with Aretha Franklin?
Well, all of you and everybody in Memphis knows that there was no one like Aretha Franklin. She was indeed the queen of soul, and she earned it. She earned every bit of it way before I started working with her. She never worked with me. I took over Columbia after she left, and she had gone to Atlantic Records, where her classic hits are still classic today. At the end of her working with Jerry Wexler, who produced all of her classic hits for Atlantic, she had done two or three albums that had not worked. And she saw that at my brand new company, Arista Records, I had signed Dionne Warwick again years after her hits with Burt Bacharach and Al Davis. And we just nailed it with a platinum album, Grammy Awards, I'll Never Love This Way Again, Deja Vu. So Aretha called me. She asked if we could have dinner at her house in Los Angeles, and she would cook for me, okay? We hit it off right at the start of that first dinner. She was saying, look, I'm nearing 40 years old. Do you think I could still have hits in this primarily youth-oriented business? And one of the great challenges of my life, apart from discovering new artists, is picking those few, what I call old-timers, ALL, old-timers, who cannot stop recording because they're unique. They're unquestionably special. And so whether it was originally with Dion or certainly with Aretha, we joined up, we had hits again. She won Grammy Awards again. Her records with George Michael, I Knew You Were Waiting For Me, with Annie Lennox Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves, Jump To It, duets with Luther Vandross. She remained always contemporary. She remained timeless.
WXR 91.7 FM, Memphis, WXR.org on the web. We're in the middle of a Clive Davis interview here with Jared J.B. Boyd, program manager. Let's get to part two. We're listening. He's going to continue talking about Aretha Franklin and his relationship with her and her relationship to Memphis. Let's do it.
I've been blessed that I've been with a number of major artists. You know, whether you go out to dinner with them, whether you go to an event with them. But there's no one who was recognized totally. I don't care what room we were in. I remember we were in a Valentino retrospective, and there was a tug at my elbow, and this well-known man was whispering in my ear saying, "I've never done this before, Clive, but you've got to introduce me to Aretha." And of course, I did, and I made Ralph Lauren very, very happy. So, A, I'm here to testify there was no one like Aretha. B, we were personal friends, confidants. as well as collaborators. And I have just the most special memories of my professional life with Aretha.
Jump, jump, jump to it.
I like that you mentioned her, the Jump To It record, because as I'm a DJ as well, and that record still gets people up on the floor and dancing. What was her chemistry like in that period with Luther Vandross? I know that he did incredible work on that
record. Well, I looked to Luther because I read an article in Rolling Stone magazine that said his three favorite, most respected artists for him personally were Diana Ross, Dionne Warwick, and Aretha Franklin, not in any particular order. So that when I saw that Aretha was clearly one of his idols, if you will, I reached out to him and I arranged for that collaboration. And they had a at times testy relationship. There was one duet, but there was a difference of opinion as to how loud Luther should be in a duet on Aretha's album. But that was minor. I want to mention it because it's part of history. On the other hand, there was enormous respect between the two of them, affection, warmth, and just aware how unique their pairing was, their artistry was, very special.
WXR 91.7 FM Memphis. You're listening to the Clive Davis interview special. I'm Robbie Grant, executive director here at WXR, sitting with Jared J.B. Boyd, program manager and interviewer.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're the interviewee. Man, such a deep history he's got with Aretha. That was exciting. It was some exciting stuff.
I mean, you can tell more than just a collaborator that he truly adores her as a human being. And, you know, she grew up just a couple, well, she was born a couple houses down from my great grandmother. So that house on Lucy, you know, I know it. I've seen it. You know, every Thanksgiving it was right there. And so it's interesting how these paths cross. I mean, you know, my great grandmother had pictures in her home of Aretha as a really young child.
Wow. And it's, you know, all these connections with Memphis. We're about to get in to Maurice White and Earth, Wind, and Fire. And, you know, you never know who you're going to run into. I used to work downtown and used to see a woman named Jerry, and she worked right around the corner and always gave me hugs and was super sweet. And it was about 2 years I found out, oh, she's the twin sister of
Verdine White, yeah. The bass player of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
They just played Memphis not too long ago, and yeah, he's still playing with them.
This is interesting. I mean, we talk even Booker T. Jones. Booker T. Jones and Maurice White were best friends at Booker T. Washington High School and the same train station where I started DJing. You know, Booker took, the train station is a hotel with a bar in it, right. And the bar has a DJ booth instead of a piano
right.
booth. But yeah, Booker dropped Maurice off at that train station wow. so he could go move to Chicago, which his career took off from there. But Maurice always had family in Chicago, and so his brother Verdine grew up in Chicago.
Got it.
But Jerry is down here. So those yeah. sometimes families can be like that in Memphis and Chicago and St. Louis, and you know, it's just the great migration, as they call it.
Yeah. Let's get back to Jared J.B. Boyd's interview with Clive Davis.
You know, I spent the day yesterday, and much of my trip was centered around an event with Booker T. Jones of Booker T. and the MGs. His closest friend in high school was Maurice White. Do you remember working with Maurice White much of Earth, Wind, and Fire?
I certainly remember that I went to a concert, never knowing about Earth, Wind, and Fire. I went to see an artist, and somehow opening for John Sebastian was Earth, Wind, and Fire. I was blown away by them. And Maurice was the leader of the group. And I remember chatting with him and saying, you know, I find what you're doing very unique, very special. What is the status of your recording contract? He said, look, we're under contract to Warner. We just don't see eye to eye about where we should be going. I'm influenced by Miles Davis, but I combine it with R&B. I fuse R&B with progression, somewhat jazz, but I'm looking for a unique, special sound. I said, well, you know, I would like to see more of that. If you could arrange for an actual audition. And if you tell Warner's, he is my biggest competitor when I was head of Columbia, was the Warner Brothers label. So they arranged very secretly for me to see the group in a recording studio in Los Angeles, and I was knocked out. And so I said, look, I'm committed to you right now. I'll sign you. you've got to somehow get out of your contract. The fact is they did. I don't know what they did or how they did it or what the economic, if there were any special arrangements. It's not that they had been successful. In 1972, and I said, look, how am I going to alert everybody at Columbia Records that this group is special, it's unique? I arranged for our annual convention to be in London, and I flew the group over there, and it was a sizable commitment in those days for an unknown new group. But I remember saying to the several hundred people at this annual convention, first time abroad, I said, look, this group defies any kind of pigeonhole definition. They're unique, they're special, and I really flew them over so that you could see them, you can understand what I'm talking about, and that each of you in your own way can do the best to launch this spectacular group. Well, I've got to tell you, Maurice, Verdeen, Ralph, they've never forgotten it. I mean, obviously, Maurice is no longer here, but I just got love for him always from him. And I just continue to get it. from the rest of the group. There's not a special occasion that I have, and if I ask a woman prior to perform, they do it without even thinking. So yes, I remember Maurice White with respect, with the warmest affection, and the specific memories that I've shared with you.
WXR 91.7 FM, Memphis, WXR.org on the web. You are in the middle of the Clive Davis interview. I've got the interviewer here with me, Jared J.B. Boyd, program manager here at WYXR. That was cool, hearing all about Earth, Wind, and Fire.
It's always difficult for me to listen back to these interviews. And, you know, this was sort of shotgun style because first of all, we're not native New Yorkers,
so we're
already fish out of water. We're running into this office to talk to Clive Davis, who's clearly on vacation. He was in Capri, Italy, and calling in to talk to us, and we don't have any rapport with him. So
he's 91 or 92.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I mean, listen, so many different layers of you know. It was like a run and gun kind of thing, and here he is on, you know, we're talking to him through the Zoom there. So I mean, it was just a lot. So I tried to make sure the questions were concise and he could hear me and understand. I was trying to feel his energy out. It was just a lot of different.
Yeah, one of the things you did in research leading up to it, just reading about Clive Davis's history with Memphis, one of those connections was with an interesting Memphis businessman that was from here that worked with Clive Logan.
Logan Westbrooks. I was reading a little bit about the entire fallout between Stax and Columbia and with Clive Davis exiting the parent company there, and his handshake deal with Al Bell. And in Robert Gordon's book, he mentions Logan Westbrooks. Who was a native of South Memphis, so just down the street from Stax, would have been probably blocks away, and went to Booker T. Washington with a lot of the artists who played at the original studio at Stax there. And so I was able to get in touch with him and ask him a little bit about his time working for Clive Davis at Columbia. They were sort of like, he was kind of his right-hand man as it regards to black music and the sort of larger vision that Clive had for implementing black popular music into the Columbia catalog. And he was very gracious. But the cool thing about him is that even after Clive Davis left Columbia, Logan Westbrooks had a long career in music and produced a lot of records and had Source Records, which is an incredible funky label in the 70s and 80s.
That's cool. Well, let's hear some of that interview, and then we'll hear something that Logan produced at the next break.
He's got a classic that he produced for sure.
All right, let's get back to it. Clive Davis interview here on WYXR 91.7 FM.
Another Memphian, not someone who was on the stage, but someone who's had an immense impact on Memphis, I mean on music rather, is Logan Westbrooks. And he told me to tell you hello, and he appreciates what you've done for him.
I knew Logan when he was just a very young man, you know, and he was just there to learn, okay? So I did not see any demonstration of what gotten the respect that you just mentioned. But he was a very, very bright young man, loved music, eager to learn, and I allowed him to watch the process. I allowed him to attend meetings and to get insight, and I'm very glad after all these years to hear the warmth of his reminiscence that he shared with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. If we could talk a bit about Stax Records and, you know, your last period with Columbia and the role that Stax played in that and your relationship with Al Bell, and whatever arrangement that could have happened from a successful partnership between Stax and Columbia Records under your direction.
Well, one of the frustrations in taking over Columbia after I had established rock as a primary successful genre for them with Janis Joplin, Blood, Sweat and Tears, Chicago, Santana, and the like, was their lack of success in what has been called R&B music. And I was not there when Aretha was there. And so the fact that they had Aretha, didn't know really how to deal with her successfully in making hit records. There was always a diversion. There was always a conflict, you know, that the promotion team was not getting hits, or the A&R team was not getting promoted correctly. So I decided two things. One is I made an arrangement with Philadelphia International Records, and I chose Gamble and Hobbs financing Philadelphia International Records. And sure enough, when those records from the OJs and Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes featuring Teddy Pendergrass and me and Mrs. Jones came, when we had hit records being given to us, we indeed broke through. So all of a sudden we were hot. All of a sudden we had a hot hand, and it was all due to the creative genius of Ken Gamble and Leon Huff. I didn't want that to be isolated. And so making sure that there was a good environment, making sure that it was not solely Philadelphia International and Kenny and Leon, is when I entered into discussions with Al Bell and for an association with Stax Records. I wanted to make sure that there was depth of contact. Don't forget, practically in those days, your distributors were selling to retailers, and I didn't want the only records contact interaction of Columbia with those retailers or ex-offers to be Philadelphia International. So it was my aim. We never really got a chance to put it into effect. But if you're asking me what was my intent was to provide much greater depth of expertise, relationships, contacts between Columbia and the African-American community.
WXR 91.7 FM Memphis. You're listening to the Clive Davis interview. I'm Robbie Grant, executive director here at WYXR, here with Jared J.B. Boyd, our program manager and interviewer of Clive Davis. What was that?
That was Bustin' Loose by Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers. This is the fun thing about researching Memphis music and Memphians. Even when I think that I know every Memphian that's done everything, I always find somebody new who, you know, grew up here or was connected to home and that has done incredible things in the music business. I mean, as someone who can do a whole DJ set and tell you about every song that I've played and how it connects back here, man, to have Chuck Brown, the Soul Searchers, Bustin' Loose, produced by someone who is a graduate of Booker T. Washington High School here and Lamona in college here. That means I can just, the next time I do a Memphis set, I can throw this in. This song is an iconic funk, and man, the go-go scene in D.C. goes crazy for that song. So, yeah. I mean, I was already playing it, but now I can tell people that there's a Memphis connection and a connection to Clive Davis. Yeah. You never know when you're mentoring someone what they might go on to do.
Yeah, that's what we're all about here, connecting folks here in the community and WYXR. And you can go to WYXR.org and sign up for our newsletter and find out more. We got a couple more little segments here of our interview with Clive Davis that took place in July of 2023. Let's hear a little bit more. This is we'll just play it, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
For sure. Yeah, let's do it.
You know, I gather that from that interaction and from the music, you know, as a music focused journalist who is primarily focused on Memphis and its geography and the implications of that. You know, you have Philadelphia International, a Northern company, Stax, a Southern company. You know, does geography, you think, matter in music then, and does it matter now?
Well, I didn't think whether it was, I never thought of it as Northern and Southern. No, I mean, it's music. I mean, I never thought of regions when I signed artists. I did it based upon belief and the creativity. I honestly never thought of it. And I know the thrust of some of your thoughts or commentary has a regional emphasis. It really was honestly not part of my thinking. At any time. I mean, the most I could say as far as thinking, and it had nothing to do with R&B, hip-hop, Memphis, or otherwise, was really San Francisco in the early days of rock. And Bill Graham was up in San Francisco. The Fillmore West was up in San Francisco. So I did open up an office of Columbia, A&R'd by David Rubinson. And that is what's coming to my mind to answer your question fully as far as geography or regional. I thought that San Francisco would continue. Carlos Santana lived up there. I auditioned him and signed him from there. And that that's the time I remember as being, other than Nashville and country music.
Who do you think you are?
gonna get my love. This tough, big stuff. You're never gonna break my heart. This tough, big stuff. You're never gonna make me cry. This tough, big stuff. Tell me, just who do you think you are? This tough, big stuff. You're never gonna get my love. This tough, big stuff.
You mentioned belief in creativity of these artists and these musicians and these labels. What was your belief in Stax's creativity? You know, I'd say that was a pretty prestigious arrangement for them to enter into, especially a company that had been sold previously a few times just before interacting with you during your time at Columbia. Are there any artists that stick out, producers, or was it the relationship with Al Bell? What about Stax gave you belief and faith that they could help you to bolster Columbia's interaction with Black music markets?
Well, it was appraising the artists that they had. My interaction, frankly, was too brief to sound expert to answer you fully. I had very good meetings with Al Bell. Our discussions, we always seemed to be of similar mind. I was very aware and respectful of the artists that were on Stax. Beyond that, I'd be improvising.
Well, I truly appreciate your time. I don't have any other questions here on my sheet, but I thank you very much for taking the time to meet with me, and I applaud all of your work. I know this is a very specific slice of your life, but you know, there's so much that I'm sure that you could share with me, but I know you got more fun in your head, your day ahead. I hope so, at least.
Well, that's so nice of you. Yeah, look, right now I've just produced the movie on Whitney Houston's life, co-produced. I'm very proud of it. It's doing incredibly well on Netflix. I recommend that film. I Want to Dance with Somebody to all your listeners. And we're currently embarking on a new documentary, which will survey really the almost 50 years of The Night That I Throw a Party. It's called My Pre-Grammy Gala, The Night Before the Grammys Every Year. And that history and the artists that never have been together on stage, whether it was Aretha with Alicia Keys, whether it was Rod Stewart with Lou Reed and Slash, just met. You know, to bring all of that together is a current priority for me. It was nice to speak with you. I recommend that you come to Italy. You should have done it in person. And I can recommend Italy, Ischia, and Capri to your Memphis listeners and that region.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I certainly, if anyone had asked me if I could come and see you in person, I certainly would have done so. Maybe next time. Or maybe you can come visit us in Memphis. Have you ever been to Memphis?
Yes. Yes, I've been to Memphis a few times. Yes.
Okay. When were you last there?
Oh, many years ago. It has to go back to my Stax discussions, okay? So it really Absolutely. Has been many years.
We'll have to change that. You come back and I can show you around and we'll certainly take you up the stats.
Okay. Good to see you and good to speak to you. Thank you.
Woo! It's WYXR 91.7 FM, WYXR.org. Robbie Grant here with Jared J.B. Boyd. That's the conclusion of our Clive Davis interview. Jared J.B. Boyd, great interview, man. Great job.
Hey, thank you, man. I learned from the best, man.
Yeah, it was cool being in the room and getting to hear the questions answered all about Memphis and Memphis-centric stuff. So, yeah, it's cool.
You know, I'm thrilled for everyone to hear it, man. This is the moment.
Well, we really appreciate everyone listening out there. You can sign up for the WYXR newsletter on our website, WYXR.org. This will be archived there as well. So if you missed it live, you could be listening to the archive now, or you can listen to it later. And we'll also have the Booker T. Jones performance with the Stax Music Academy, and also Jared J.B. Boyd's interview with Booker T. at Lincoln Center. That'll be up soon, and the newsletter and our social media is the best way to keep up with it. So, all right, let's get out of here. Thanks, Jared. Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks, Robbie.
All right.